Since 1931, Financial Executives International has been the leading advocate for the views of corporate financial management. Its more than 10,000 members hold policymaking positions as chief financial officers, chief accounting officers, controllers, and treasurers at companies from every major industry. And FEI enhances its members' professional development through peer networking, career management services, conferences, research, and publications. Join FEI today to network with key influencers, understand emerging issues, advocate for corporate finance, and boost your career opportunities. Both individual and corporate membership options are available. Go to www.financialexecutives.org and click on Become a Member. Or look for the link in this episode's show notes.
Hi, this is Chris Westfall, and this is the FEI Weekly Podcast. The post-pandemic economy has reset the playbook for many financial executives and industries, but one company that has seemed to thrive in the crisis is Nashville-based Tractor Supply Company. With stores throughout the U.S. and a focus on rural America, Tractor Supply has grown by double digits in terms of sales and new customers. As part of Financial Executive Weekly Podcast's continuing series on finance in middle America, we speak with Chris Bybee, Vice President of Finance at Tractor Supply Company, on how they have managed the explosive growth, the challenges of recruiting finance talents outside of the coastal cities, and what you can learn from America's love of chickens. Thanks for joining us today, Chris. I really appreciate it. It's really some of these conversations we're going to have and are having around, you know, finance functions outside of sort of the main industry, you know, some of the more high, well-known industries of finance and getting into middle America are really interesting. But I want to sort of like level set the conversation a little bit, and maybe you can talk a little bit about yourself. And, you know, if I understand it, you came up through public accounting into the controllership. So can you talk a little bit about that path and how you found yourself in the current role?
Absolutely. And first I'd say, thanks for the invitation to be on the podcast today. Happy to be here and help participate. As you mentioned, I've had a variety of roles in my career. I've been blessed with a rewarding path, a rewarding career so far. It's not what I expected when I started a career, but I will tell you, I've really enjoyed it. Looking back, I acknowledge that I have a financially oriented mind and noticed that when I was probably in my teenage years, but I just didn't know how to harness it. And then over time, you kind of start to really develop different like skill sets. You get exposure to different things and you start to harness your interests and competencies. And when I went to school, I had a dual concentration study in accounting and also in finance economics. Mm-hmm. And that led me towards a spot when I was ready to graduate of, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? Right. And for me, it was a choice that a lot of people make. I went into public accounting, started with Deloitte, and joined their audit practice in 2008. And my time at Deloitte would be pretty similar to a lot of individuals you probably speak to, and right, pretty stereotypical. I joined their audit practice, and I learned so much. It was very formative for me. Opened up a lot of exposure to businesses, different types, different industry sizes, financial scenarios as they exist in the real world, not just in a textbook, and even the simple things about how to conduct yourself in a professional setting. A lot of these professional firms like Deloitte really just give you a well-rounded experience. Loved the people there, loved the culture, loved what Deloitte gave me. I look back with nothing but fond memories. But I did hit a point where the nature of the work is something that I really felt like I was not challenging myself enough and wanted to look to do something else. And so for me, it felt like a natural evolution of my career to step out of audit and move, you know, maybe one step forward into accounting. And at the time, I was acknowledging that I was leaving something I really enjoyed, which was the culture of Deloitte, the challenge of Deloitte. I wanted to find something that felt similar. And I interviewed quite a few places and ultimately found myself at Tractor Supply. And within my first set of interviews, loved the place. And we'll get more into, you know, my views on Tractor Supply and my love of the company in a few minutes. But joined Tractor Supply's accounting department in 2015 and have really just had a number of opportunities and experiences within accounting to take on new opportunities, take on growth and advancement. A lot of times you might think that when you leave public accounting, your career can kind of stall after that, but it's been the exact opposite for me. It really felt like it hit the accelerator when I came here. And part of that is just for me, a willingness to want to throw myself out there and learn and contribute and grow. And part of it is this company has been on an amazing growth trajectory, and I've been able to grow with the company, and I've had great people to support me. And I spent, I'm now finishing 8 years with Tractor Supply. I spent the first six in some facet in the accounting function. And about three of those were as the company's controller and got to, you know, have the responsibility for overseeing all aspects of the controllership, accounting and controls and reporting and all those components, and enjoyed it. And it presented a lot of growth opportunities for me, both soft skills, leadership, talking to a board, talking to other executives. And it opened up my eyes to a lot of things that I really enjoyed. And so it kind of gave this natural evolution, similar to when I left from audit into accounting here at Tractor Supply. I got an opportunity about 2 years ago to move out of the controllership and over into our financial organization. And in that organization, I'm involved with our financial planning analysis group as well as our treasury group. And in there is a lot of stereotypical planning activities. There's some aspect of accounting adjacent items. But one of the things that really opened up my eyes to taking that role was more the strategic lens and helping the company, you know, how do we think about our growth strategies? How do we think about ways to improve? And as I look across the course of the career, it's been almost a natural evolution each time I've had an opportunity to expand just a little bit further and do something just a little bit different. And I've had amazing people to support me and help me grow. As I maybe mentioned at the start, it's not the way I thought the career would play out when I first graduated from school, but I look back and it's been really phenomenal and rewarding. Finance as a career and a discipline has been challenging, dynamic, and a lot of fun.
I gotta have to ask you, what was your thought of your career when you did leave school? What was your plan?
Probably I defaulted to being a partner at an audit firm. Mm-hmm. You kind of look at what's near term. And at the time, you know, there's a lot of glamour to the big firms and making a career there. And I considered it for a while. And again, I mentioned I loved Deloitte and loved the people there. And I have so many great things to say. But I really just got to the point where the nature of the work, I felt like I had more to offer. And that's kind of what was the precipice for me, you know, changing directions, if you will, after a few years.
Yeah, we do hear that a lot. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned this because there was a discussion we've, you know, had among members about sort of what the career pipeline is between, you know, the public accounting firms and into industry. But I just wanted to get from you the idea, what was the sort of the tipping point for you when you decided, well, you know, public accounting is not going to meet my path. I want to do something else. I mean, what was the tipping point where you decided, well, I'm going to take a jump into industry?
I think that's a good question. I don't know that there was, some salient point where I really just said, this is the moment where I've made a decision. It felt as if it was more of an ongoing evolution over, I was probably about 5 years into my career at Deloitte. I was a manager at the time. I was working on a large public company and started to notice my clients when I spoke with them, how they've thought about their business and how they thought about, different aspects. And it felt like the challenges that they were presented with had a little more strategic slant to them, had a little more challenging thought process to it. And I just started to get intrigued by that concept and wanted to explore it further. But there wasn't like a specific moment. It was just more of an evolution, I guess, of a career and evolution of watching those around me and, you know, intrigued by something I'd not done before. And I wanted to try something different.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it really is, you know, interesting that you mentioned that, because that is something that we hear a lot from people about. They feel it's a natural extension of their career path. But I wanted to get back to sort of like the thesis of what we're discussing today. And that's, you know, what does, as I mentioned, we talk a lot to people in finance, and a lot of times we end up talking to people on different coasts. But, you know, there's this whole other area of finance and ecosystem in rural and middle America. And you're based in Nashville at Tractor Supply, and that obviously serves a lot of rural communities. But so, you know, when you talk about finance and accounting, or just in general, what do you consider the biggest misconception about companies outside the more like high profile industries in regions like tech or banking or the coasts?
Yeah, it's a very fair question. I fully acknowledge, you know, the coastal cities, the industries like tech that get a lot of the attention. It's very well warranted and well deserved. They have a lot of limelight. There's a lot to offer there. At the same point in time, I think in contrast, a company like us, helping to serve kind of that rural lifestyle, we might fly under the radar, but I think we have a compelling story also. As you mentioned, we are just outside of Nashville, in a suburb outside of Nashville, and we've had a tremendous opportunity to grow our business. And with that growth of the business comes a natural evolution of the finance requirements, capabilities of the teams, the focus areas that we have that, you know, when I talk with others in the industry, it feels like we're on par with a lot of the challenges and capabilities that our bigger counterparts are dealing with. Mm. You know, us at Tractor Supply, the growth story that we've been on has really opened up a lot of opportunities for us. I think a lot of people don't realize how big Tractor Supply is.
Right.
We've got over 2,100 stores in 49 states and growing every year, $14 billion in revenue and Fortune 300. And you start to stack that up, and you know the demands and the needs of a growing business like that actually find themselves fairly comparable in some regards to that of your techs in your coastal cities.
Yeah, that's a good point. That brings up another question I want to ask you. Maybe it would be good for Lance. What do you think, and I have heard this before, why do you think Tractor Supply has so many fans on Wall Street? Because I see it, and I see there's a lot of discussion about Tractor Supply as a, whether it's, you know, whatever, as a stock or just as an organization in the investment community. Do you have a specific thesis, or does the organization have a specific thesis when it comes to their approach to talking with shareholders or talking with customers?
Yeah. You know, one thing I think that people appreciate about us is we have a tremendous past. If you look at our performance and go back over virtually any time horizon, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, we have consistently grown. We've consistently done, had our growth at very, in a profitable way. Mm-hmm. We have had an outstanding stock performance because of that. We've had 30 of our last 31 years with positive comp sales. And the 1 year that we were negative was 2009. It was a negative one. Mm-hmm. And so you start to have that track record of we're opening, you know, somewhere between 70 and 100 new stores every year. We are having positive comps every year. We're doing it in a profitable way. That consistency is something that I think a lot of people really appreciate. And for us, you know, we believe that run rate is still very long. We don't see that stopping anytime soon. Every demographic, you know, attribute that we look at, market attribute that we look at, we believe we continue to have a lot of opportunity for growth. And that consistency of the profitable growth is something that, you know, a lot of individual investors and Wall Street analysts look at and really, I think, appreciate. And then the last thing I'd throw out there, which is specific, you know, for us and the way we think of our business internally, it does come down to the people that are here and the culture that we have. You know, that's something you don't get to put in financial models, but being here in the building and interacting with the people, you know, everyone here is sincere. We value our relationships. We want to do the best we can for the business, but at first moment for us, it's relationships. And that's something that doesn't go into financial model, but every time we talk to investors, every time we talk to analysts, you know, that's one of the points of feedback that we get is the culture seems so genuine and strong and transparent and has you know, a good set of mission and values behind it that guides us. And I think that's really the intangible that helps even separate us even further, not just from our performance, but our culture is our secret sauce.
Yeah, I wanted to get that a little bit and specifically into like finance accounting, because I'm sure you heard or there's a debate going on about the pipeline into accounting and the ability to get the number of people that's needed to apply to this. And so, you know, a lot of people are in finance accounting are talking about the pipeline, the struggle to recruit young people. What are you seeing that same thing in Nashville? I mean, as you would see in like New York or in LA or something like that?
Yeah, we absolutely are seeing a lot of those same friction points. Yeah, I'll start with Nashville as a city. We have been on an amazing growth trajectory in the past, call it 10 years. And with that, a lot of companies have moved here. A lot of individuals have too, but the supply and demand curve is still fairly imbalanced for Nashville. So it's a very competitive market, similar to a lot of other places. But in Nashville specific, we are feeling a lot of the pressure from our local talent pipeline. You stack on top of that, to your point, that finance can even further exacerbate that talent pipeline concern or shortage. It has some niche aspects to the role, and not everyone's in those roles. And so the confluence of both of those things, we're absolutely seeing, you know, pressure on the pipeline. And you know, for us, we have constant dialogue about that, because with our growth, we, you know, are growing our teams, we're growing our resources and our capabilities, and we wanted to make sure that the talent pipeline, both the people we have in seats today, how do we develop them, but then how do we also bring in new individuals? And you know, one thing that we believe here, and I believe, is it's back to the relationships at its core. The people want to be a part of a company that they feel, you know, provides good opportunities for them, and really focus on how do we provide a compelling employee value proposition, holistic approach around culture and relationships, offering technical skill opportunities and soft skill opportunities and rotational jobs and advancements in careers. It's a holistic approach for us that we believe we fare pretty well because we do have a strong history of performance, a good outlook in front of us, and a good culture. But that's not to say that it still hasn't been tough, because it is, with both Nashville and the greater finance industry being under a little bit of pressure.
There's been, you know, in particular, there's been a lot of discussion about the CPA and the, you know, number of people taking the CPA exam and their role. Are you finding that specifically challenging getting like CPAs, or is that not an issue for your organization?
It hasn't been a tremendous issue for our organization. In our city, we are amongst the marquee names, if you will, for individuals. And so we are able to use that to our advantage, both from the culture and from the growth of the company, to attract new talent that is interested in getting a CPA license or already has one. So for us, we haven't directly experienced that, although when I was spent my time in the controllership, I would talk with peers who did acknowledge that pressure. Sometimes it was hard to get individuals interested in taking that test, because it is a grueling test to go through the study and, you know, work through it all. It takes a lot of time and commitment. For us, we haven't directly seen as much of that pressure, but do acknowledge it exists.
One thing, I'm going to turn a little bit towards, you know, the organization and its approach to the customer. Maybe you could go a little bit into about Tractor Supply's footprint and its approach to, you know, where you place your stores and the communities you serve, to give an idea to the listener about what the company is all about.
Great question. So again, we have over 2,100 stores currently. We are in 49 states. We're all domestic, but we've got a tremendous footprint, as you think, across the U.S., and we're growing every single year. In the past, we've grown 70 to 80 stores a year recently and expect that growth trajectory to continue for the foreseeable future. From a footprint perspective, our main focus area is in rural areas and ex-urban outside of suburbia. There are times when we built locations that were not in suburbs at the moment, but then the suburbs crept up on them. So we do have some suburban stores, but those are not usually where we enter. It's usually that suburb, the city sprawl happened and came out into our area. But it's interesting, even when that occurs, those stores still are received really well and perform really well. So we think of ourselves as being outside of that main urban core, whether that's true rural or ex-urban, and even some cases suburban, and serving a lifestyle for people that is focused on land and homesteading and in some regards, you know, livestock and animals, whether that's a companion animal like a dog, whether that's poultry, cattle, and really helping us to provide for that lifestyle overall. And meet our customers. We call it out here is the phrase that we use, life out here, and meet them, you know, in their towns to help them, you know, live that lifestyle of sustainability and DIY and all of those components that come with it.
So, yeah, I think I read in one of your earnings call, there was a one quarter where you had a lot of people coming out from suburbs and sometimes urban areas to pick up their Carhartt jackets and other material to you know, I guess, adopt the lifestyle.
That's right. It's been really interesting. I think we've always had strong demand. I mean, I've referenced over whatever time horizon you look at, we've had a great period of growth in our customers and our, obviously, the volumes of sales and all of that. But coming out of the pandemic, there was a lot of behavioral shifts that occurred in the greater population, and all of them have remained sticky so far. And everything that we've seen from our business is the trends have held. But things like rural migration or urban exodus, we've seen an increased desire for a self-reliant lifestyle, homesteading, more animals, more land. And with that, your Tractor Supply becomes a natural complement to help support that lifestyle. And whether it is truly those needs-based items that we think that we're really one of the best at offering, or sometimes it's things that you mentioned, Carhartt. It's a brand that we've added a few years ago, and it's been a great component of our story to help us. You know, there's parts of Carhartt that are workwear and help the people live the lifestyle, and there's parts of it that have Carhartt's caught on as high fashion,
right?
And people driving out of the cities to come get Carhartt with us, and it opens up an opportunity that they may not have seen otherwise. If you live in a city, a lot of times you may not know about Tractor Supply. When you come to our stores, right, you get the opportunity to kind of see the full portfolio of what we offer, and we've been able to garner a lot of new customers that we didn't previously have prior to the pandemic. And they've been, you know, really sticky and loyal so far in a way that we've you know, appreciated and try to continue to support them to help convince people to live that out here lifestyle that we call it.
Yeah, that's one thing I want to, you mentioned the pandemic and the changes that maybe you could talk a little bit about what you saw and how both, I guess, the customer base change or its reaction to the pandemic and how you managed it from a, you know, finance point of view as far as staff was concerned.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd start with overall, I think a lot of us learned a tremendous amount throughout the pandemic about a need to be adaptive in the moment. So much was changing so rapidly. And, you know, in finance, we often talk about, sometimes more academically than practically, about like the importance of scenario planning and being responsive and reactive. And, you know, the pandemic really reinforced that from a business perspective and from a financial perspective. Yeah, I'll take apart the, obviously, the health impacts of it all, which were very tremendous. But purely from a business perspective, I think it reinforced the need to be reactive and adaptive and have, you know, scenario planning in place. For us, you know, it ended up net driving more volume and business to us. We had a greater interest in the type of products that we offered to allow people to, you know, as they exited the cities, to start up, you know, buy a home, get some land, get the tools to take care of it. Maybe they didn't have a dog and then they got one. And these types of things for us that brought on new customers from like demographic shifts and trend shifts that brought more customers to us effectively. And we were there and ready to serve them. And it, at its core for us, you know, what we really focused on, whether it was a customer or whether it was our internal team members, we wanted to ensure that what we were doing is viewing ourselves as that source of stability, the relationship focus, doing everything we could to provide for our team members, everything we could to provide for our customers. It was a very uncertain time. And, you know, our viewpoint was just let's do the best we can to uphold those relationships and you know, get through the pandemic together.
Yeah, a couple of follow-ups to that. You know, there's how did you manage the? I mean, obviously, Tractor Supply, you know, is integrated into so many supply chains. In what ways did you react to that, or how did you have to react to that? And also, I guess as a follow-up to that, you know, that talks about the customer-facing side. But on the staff, are you still allowing staff, including finance and accounting, to work from home? How do you approach that?
Sure. I'll start with the supply chain question. I think our story in a lot of ways was similar to a number of retailers. We saw a tremendous spike in the demand for goods. The supply chain constraint that came with it put a lot of pressure on our vendor community, our transportation community, our distribution centers. When we look back, I am immensely proud of our vendor base, our internal team members, our transportation partners. I would stack us up against a lot of retailers and say that we performed, you know, amongst the best in class. And it really just, again, comes back to that deep relationships that existed prior to the pandemic. We were able to call on those, and our vendor base really stepped up. Our people and our team members, we did everything we could to try to help support them and get through the pandemic. And in return, you know, they helped us get through supply chain constraints. And we were able to leverage this, the vendor base that was in place, the scale that was in place. And we also have a little bit of a benefit from the fact that we don't do as much import business. We do more domestic business. And so that was a little bit of a structural advantage that we had that we didn't face as many of. Although we faced a lot of supply chain constraints, we probably didn't face as many as some other retailers did. So a combination of a lot of those things, you know, it was a challenging time for supply chain, but proud of how we fared through it. If I switch over to our people and thinking about, you know, out in our stores, obviously it's you know, people are in the stores.
Right.
And we kind of took an approach here that we acknowledge the need for flexibility. We acknowledge the need for a hybrid environment. But at the same point in time, wanted to be respectful that we were asking our team members in the stores to be present. And we wanted to make sure that our people here were doing something similar within fair bounds. Mm-hmm. And so we set up rigorous protocol for health and safety measures during the pandemic to invite people into the office, not necessarily mandate it by any stretch, but to invite an offering for people to come in and do it in a way that felt safe with all of our protocols. Mm-hmm. And then exiting the pandemic, a lot of those same behaviors have been pretty sticky.
Yeah.
We are still a hybrid environment. I would say that our teams on average are probably in the office 2.5 days a week. You'll find some people that are in here 4 or 5, some people that are in here 1, some people are coming 2, 3, and it just balances across the spectrum. But the building here in our store support center is still vibrant and still has a lot of people coming in. And yeah, I think us, very similar to a lot of other people, just realized that you know, our eyes were open to how effective people can be outside of our store support center. And we just want to continue to acknowledge that and allow people to be, you know, work from home or work remote wherever they are. At the same point in time, we do believe that there's a benefit for people being in office and learning from one another and collaborating. Right. And so it truly does come down to that hybrid and flexible work environment to allow people to, you know, balance in and out.
One thing I want to ask a little bit of a forward-looking question, and I guess it's still a debate of what the level is and what, but inflation. And there's a lot of discussion regarding inflation and how prices have increased. They're made their ways down to consumers. So what has Tractor Supply experience been, especially in, you know, serving your rural consumer base? From inflationary price increases, is it different from other consumers? How do they react? And how do you react from a finance standpoint to that?
I would say at the highest level that our experience is probably very similar to a lot of others. Mm-hmm. We're not immune to this by any stretch of the imagination. I think for us, we've seen a tremendous amount of increases in the overall cost of business, whether that's core commodity increases, cost of labor increases, both for us as well as our vendor base, transportation and freight market increases. So all of that that's occurred and been in the news cycle in the past 18 months has been something that we've experienced is along with everyone else. We've not been immune to that. Our focus and response, one from a business perspective, is to be a retailer that's priced right every day. We call it everyday low price strategy. We want to be priced competitively and appropriately for our customers every single day. And so the main focus for us as a business and for the teams, all our merchandising teams, our finance teams, is to ensure that we're managing all these cost pressures that have come at us and help to take pricing actions if needed, but to try to really find ways to create efficiencies, create any kind of offsets to help minimize the impact that goes to the front of the store and hits our customer. Hmm. And it's been a delicate balance for us. It's been something that we've tried to manage very tightly. Our customer has responded with, similar to everyone else, acknowledges the inflation, but at the same point knows that we're there for them for the best price that we can offer in the market. And we have been competitive. The last thing I'll mention is I think about the rural customer that we serve. Inflation has come along. Mm. Our customer, one, is coming to us predominantly for needs-based items rather than discretionary items. Again, right. Going back to feed and food for their animals, care of their land, their fencing, clothing for work. So our needs-based items have maybe had us a little bit less susceptible to the discretionary spend categories. Mm. I combine that with a lot of our customer base has been decently positioned to weather an inflation storm. That's things like they own their own homes rather than rent. And so they've locked in, prior to the mortgages going up, they've locked in pretty good mortgage rates. Right. They're fixed. Income that they earn has our typical customer is median to slightly above median income. Mm. And so we see that our customer is fairly well positioned from an income perspective and from a cost perspective to weather an inflation storm. And pressure is with anybody, but it's something that I think both our company has been mindful of and trying to navigate well, and our customer has also been able to navigate as well.
One thing I want to ask you is the growth of, like you've talked about over the 3-year history, and you've almost in every state right now. What's the growth strategy for Tractor Supply going forward? Do you have a certain number of stores you're looking to open over the next year?
Yeah, that's a great question. So our growth strategy, one would be, we want to continue to serve our existing customers. We have a Neighbors Club program, which is a traditional loyalty program that we are very proud of. We've got 30 million customers in that program with great retention rates. And that customer makes up a huge part of our base. And we want to continue to serve them well through a variety of things like being the right price, bringing the right assortment, and really taking care of those customers. We are currently undergoing a chain-wide store remodel program to freshen up our store, improve space productivity, bring new assortments that we didn't previously have, things like power tools and Carhartt that you mentioned earlier, and bringing new offerings. In addition to that, where it makes sense, we are looking at adding garden centers, and we think that we have an opportunity for about 60% of our chain to have a garden center. Mm. with that as well, which again just expands the assortment. It opens up new opportunities for those customers in the towns that we operate in. And so one of our main growth strategies is to continue to cultivate that customer base and bring them new innovation and new offerings, which will help us grow our comparable store sales. Another component of our growth strategy is opening new stores, which you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And we've been very successful at opening up a healthy number of stores every year and expect that to go forward. We believe that we have a 2,800 store opportunity. We're currently a little over 2,100, but we constantly look at that model to see, does that number need to shift or not? Right. And over time, we found ourselves, you know, increasing that from time to time, and we continue to look at that. And the only thing I'd say is we've got, you know, externally stated a lot of good opportunity and believe there's a long runway in front of us for opening up new stores.
Great. Well, so we're getting towards the end of our conversation, but there's really a critical question I want to ask. I have had the opportunity because I've seen it mentioned in a couple of earnings calls, and that's chickens. it's really interesting. It's an inflation story. It's a supply chain story, but Tractor Supply has a live chicken business. You have Chick Days. Can you discuss a little bit about how that fits into the company's approach and how customers are responding to it, and how do you manage something like that from your seat?
That's an interesting question. You're right. It is a very unique offering, very unique to Tractor Supply. It's actually kind of fun too. I think about a number of customers we hear about. I even experienced this with my own family and my kids, to be able to go in and experience that. We call it retail theater, to have those chicks in the middle of the store. And it's really kind of fun to kind of come in and look at those chicks and watch them run around. But, you know, more broadly, I'd say there's been a tremendous interest in the poultry industry. Mm. We have had Chick Days for a very long time. We started in the 90s. Mm. In the past 5 years, we've sold over 50 million birds, wow, chicks and ducks both. We sold 10 million last year and expect to grow on top of that this year. The interest in the category has been tremendous. Mm. I think there was always interest there. Mm. As I mentioned, we had this since the 90s. Right. But really, even in the past 5 years, the whether it's sustainability, again, rural migration and urban exodus, a lot of people have really taken to raising poultry as a way to offer a sustainable lifestyle, get your own eggs. You made the reference about, you know, eggflation. That was a big story earlier this year. And it just continues to draw interest to a category that we're uniquely positioned to offer. And it really does kind of enhance the connection to Tractor Supply. And the feedback that we get from our customer base is really positive. There's a lot of these, you know, online communities and tutorials and videos, and people are building like great, you know, out here lifestyle stories around owning chickens and having eggs. And it's something fun for the family and the kids to take care of. And it's been a really just fun story to watch over the years, is how it evolved and how it garners more interest, and something that we're really proud of offering. And we really love the, you know, what it means for the people in the communities.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
As you mentioned, from a finance perspective,
right? Exactly.
Interestingly enough, I think I just kind of view it as perhaps another offering that we have. It's another SKU. Operationally, there's a lot more that goes into it about the welfare of the birds and all that. And I think we've got best in class on our ability to operationally move through that. But financially, for us, it's more about just looking at the whole ecosystem of the poultry and the live birds themselves. But then what comes with that is, you know, the coops that they live in, the different feed, the different attachment items that come with that lifestyle, and how that creates a little bit of a ecosystem, if you will, for our customers.
Yeah, no, it was really interesting. And just hearing it discussed on some of the earnings calls, and, you know, there's always, you know, there's all these economists out there are talking about different like derivative strategies about interest rates and where the economy is going. But you have people in these communities essentially doing an inflation hedge using chickens. It's quite impressive, and Tractor Supply's approach to it is really interesting. So I really want to thank you for taking the time today. It's been a very interesting conversation, and I really appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation and glad to be a part of it.